and welcome to my podcast, John Scott Lawton's English You Know. In this seventh episode of my audiobook, Forever in Florence, we again follow the story of Isabella, who lives in modern-day Florence. Isabella is encountering difficulties in her relationship with David as she begins to wonder where he comes from, what his background is, and what his story is really all about. Chapters 37, 39, and 41 tell Isabella's story in comparison with the even-numbered chapters of 38, 40, and 42, which go back 500 years in time to tell the story of Francesca and Michelangelo Buonarroti as he finally looks to escape the clutches of the Medici family when he's in hiding in Florence. I hope you're enjoying this audiobook, and if you would like to receive a free transcript of the story so far, please contact me via email, johnscottlawton@hotmail.co.uk, or via messaging me on the Spotify sound app. If you wish to discuss any matter related to English language learning, then again, please make contact with me either through LinkedIn or by using my email. Thank you very much indeed. Chapter 37. Isabella guided David carefully down the stone stairs of the university, mindful of the fact that he couldn't grab the handrail with his right hand. They switched sides, and David walked to Isabella's left. "It's amazing how difficult this is this way," she said. "I know. It surprises a lot of people. You get used to guiding or being guided in a certain way very quickly, so when you have to change over for any reason, it's a bit disorientating." "Have you never had a guide dog?" asked Isabella, genuinely curious. "I did, at university. She was a big help. You can imagine Oxford with all the bicycles. It was a nightmare for her. We were hit more than once by people riding on pavements, or when we were just sitting at the side of the road. Occupational hazard, I suppose. But it's really quite shocking when it happens," explained David. Isabella decided to voice the thoughts that were going through her head. She already felt a closeness to David that allowed her to be so open. She felt she could have a conversation with him about anything. "If you don't mind me asking, how do you think your blindness affects your life?" David didn't answer straight away. He was obviously giving careful consideration to the depth of the question. "I would say its impact is pretty profound, of course, but you really do learn to adapt and adjust, and you just have to try to not let it stop you doing things you really want to do. It tests your character and your resolve, that's for sure." Isabella appreciated his honesty and his inner strength. He was sensitive, yet strong, open and clear in his thinking. There was no hint of self-pity or even frustration, she felt. "When you think about it," continued David, "it won't be long before blind people can have driverless cars. There are even blind pilots who fly just on their instruments. Technology has come a long way as well, although tech companies had to be dragged kicking and screaming into providing accessible platforms and usable content, things have got better. I was heavily involved in that work at the beginning. That's where I met my wife." The last comment took her rather by surprise. She didn't know how to respond. Many questions were going through her mind. Was he another player, coming over to Italy for a few months, leaving his English wife and possibly kids at home, while he had fun in the sun, aided and abetted by his sister? Or did he mean ex-wife, and he had just not been very clear? He didn't look old enough to have been married and divorced, although on reflection, she felt, there was a sadness to him that made him look old enough to have lived that experience. David didn't help her any more with any more immediate explanation, but Isabella felt herself cooling to him a little with this particular bombshell. The last thing she wanted at the moment was to be dragged into someone's love triangle. She had had just about enough of the drama with Mia and Luigi last year, and she was still healing, emotionally and physically, from the scars. "What would you like to drink?" asked David politely as they settled into a nearby trattoria. "Just a white wine and soda, please, David, thank you," said Isabella. He ordered in perfect Italian, and there was an extended silence between the pair. Isabella looked at him again, searching for more details. His bandaged right hand did not give away any secrets, other than those that David had revealed already. but when she looked closely, although there was no ring on his wedding finger, there was a definite mark in the folds of the skin, as if he had recently worn a wedding band. Isabella's frustration grew as she felt triggered. She really didn't want to start anything with anyone who had a difficult past, or rather present. She had promised herself that she would rather stay alone than feed someone else's ego. She had had enough of men using her for their own means and desires. While it was fun occasionally, she had been making rather too much of a habit of it recently, and she was looking, albeit not actively, for something a little more than a bit of fun from her next relationships. She was almost sure that she herself was not ready for a relationship. She wasn't being selfish, she was just enjoying the time she had now on her own to think things through, change her job, and to refocus on her own interests and needs. She certainly did not want to carry anyone, emotionally or metaphorically. This time spent in her thoughts made David seem distant too, and she didn't hear his next interaction. He had to repeat himself. "Did you enjoy the class?" I said. "I felt I was a bit flat tonight. It must be the painkillers. I felt a bit numb." If it was sympathy he was after, he wasn't going to get it from her. She was not in the mood. Increasingly, she felt like just getting up and leaving. She asked David where his sister was and whether she would meet him to guide him home. Her disappointment was turning to anger. She died in a car crash 18 months ago. This trip was planned before COVID. I had to put it off until now. I wanted to come to honour her memory and to do the things we wanted to do. She always wanted to come to Florence. "Who died, David?" stumbled Isabella. "My wife." "I don't call her my ex-wife. She was my wife when she died. She will always be my wife to me. She made a mistake overtaking a farm vehicle, and she died instantly in a head-on crash with another Land Rover. The weather was really bad that day, apparently." Isabella struggled to put everything together. In the space of a few moments, she had gone from really liking David, to thinking he was just another chancer and an idiot, to having this revelation blurted out, with all its associated pain and suffering he must have gone through, but which felt understated. Sheila and I met at Oxford. She was a brilliant computer scientist, very clever. "We hit it off right away. I just thought I should mention it in case you had any doubts about me," said David. David was incredibly intuitive and sensitive. He had picked up on Isabella's increasing sense of unease with him. His direct approach didn't surprise her, but she wondered if there might have been another way he could have told her. "Have you ever been married?" asked David. She didn't answer. That was another story, and she was already in too much shock to be able to give a sensible answer. "Let's talk about something else, shall we? The night is young and it's ours. Let's live for the present," answered Isabella. Chapter 38. Antonio stood by the side of the main road to Bologna, anxious to get back to the university campus to prepare for his final examinations and to complete his degree. He had worked hard thus far, and he was determined to do well. He had to admit to himself, though, that he had been distracted by thoughts of the beautiful Francesca ever since meeting her again by the river in Florence. He had always admired her. Now he was pretty sure that he loved her, cared for her, and despite everything that had happened, or not happened, he wanted to see her again. He was very confused, though, about what had happened in her home a couple of nights previously. He felt sure that she had made advances towards him, and he certainly would not have resisted if she had wanted to become intimate with him at that point. He couldn't get the vision of Francesca in the shower out of his mind. She had the most gorgeous body, that of a mature woman, with a beautiful feminine shape and adorable breasts. He could still remember their firmness, the shadow they cast onto her lower stomach when she stretched her arms up into the air, and the colour of her nipples as the water cascaded from them. He played that scene through his mind, over and over and over again. At the crossroads to a number of smaller towns and villages cutting across this main highway, Antonio waited and waited for a carriage, any carriage, that would take him further on his journey to Bologna. He had been there for 6 hours, and the number of people who had waited with him had dwindled, but there were now still 5 or 6 people there, desperate to continue their journeys. It was far too far to walk, and he was almost resigned to spending the night by the side of the road, so much so that he had started to look at the farm buildings surrounding him, to see which one he felt he could use to sleep in. At that moment, an elegant-looking carriage being pulled by 2 sturdy white horses came into view. The small group of travellers edged forward towards the side of the road, waving at the man leading the horses to stop for them. As it trundled to a stop, Antonio noticed a familiar motif on the door at the side of the carriage. It was the crest of the Medici family. He recognised, too, the face of the man who stuck his head through the curtained window to shout at the horse driver to ask why he had stopped. "Signor Facchetti, would you have space within your carriage which you might offer to me to take me to Bologna? I'm fearful that I might miss my examinations at the university. Please help me if you can," pleaded Antonio. Signor Facchetti looked at the young man up and down and considered him a worthy travel companion. The conversation should at least be entertaining and informative with a university student, especially one as handsome and charming as this young man. "Young man, what is your name and where are you from?" asked Signor Facchetti in an authoritative and questioning voice. "I am Antonio Rivera from Florence. My grandfather comes from Fiesole. I am a student of economics and mercantile trade at the University of Bologna, and I need to get there urgently to complete my final studies," answered Antonio. "Well, that seems a worthy endeavour, young man. Come and sit beside me and take comfort under my blanket. The night is turning chilly now," said Facchetti with an underlying dark tone to his voice. "What have you been doing back home if you have university studies to complete? Was that a wise thing to do in the circumstances?" "Sir, I had just a few days of rest before the final examinations. I felt I needed a break as I was beginning to struggle in the heat of Bologna, but, of course, Florence is not much better. I spent some days in the countryside with my grandparents," explained Antonio, already fearing that he was telling this inquisitive man rather too much too soon. "Come, come, I have urgent business too, on behalf of the Medici family in Bologna. I've been distracted of late by my search for that traitor Michelangelo Buonarroti. I don't suppose you heard any news of his whereabouts when you were in the city or in your grandfather's village?" asked Facchetti menacingly, as if he sensed that Antonio had more to tell. "No, no, I have heard nothing of him," he argued. "What has he done to fall out of favour with the Medici family?" "He sided with those who would have a republic in Tuscany, and that goes against the business interests of the family. They have been a major sponsor for his works, and this is how he has rewarded them," said Facchetti, the anger in his voice palpable. I see," said Antonio, nervous now that he had indeed said too much, fearing that the mere suggestion of the village of Fiesole may now bring it under suspicion. The pair travelled on in the dark carriage, and at one point Antonio was sure that he could feel Facchetti's hand or fingers trembling on his inner thigh. Antonio moved sharply to avoid the contact, but now he could feel Facchetti's other hand reaching for his groin. "Sir, I must sleep, as I am sure that tomorrow I must prepare myself for examination at the university. Are you not tired yourself?" asked Antonio. "I can always be refreshed," said Facchetti, the deceit and intrigue in his voice noticeable to Antonio, who was now getting very, very nervous. "Sire, we are approaching the city," the carriage driver shouted after 3 long hours, much to Antonio's relief. Antonio asked to be dropped off on the outskirts of the city. He was far happier alighting here rather than travelling further into the city centre with the lecherous Facchetti. He hoped that he had not said too much during his conversations to put Michelangelo, or indeed his beloved Francesca, into trouble. He stumbled through the city streets, desperate to find his lodgings, to get to sleep so that he could get the thoughts of Facchetti's hands exploring his body out of his mind and focus on his desire for Francesca. Sleep did not come easily, but as it did, he prayed for Michelangelo and for the safety of Francesca, and took her into his dreams to comfort himself and to express his desire for her in his fantasies. Chapter 39. David's bombshell about his wife rather put a damper on proceedings, making each of them a little quieter than they would have liked. It wasn't an uncomfortable silence, more one of contemplation and reflection, possible even in the busy streets of Florence when there was something so profound to focus on. It was as if the pair were in a meditative state, comfortable in each other's presence, but not needing to speak in order to communicate. After a while, David tried to lighten the mood. "You know what? I am in the mood for dancing after all. My hand isn't hurting so much, and I won't need it where we're going. Are you in the mood, or could I tempt you?" Although it was sticky and still hot, Isabella needed something to take her out of herself, and dancing seemed to be the ideal thing for that moment. "Sure, David, what do you have in mind?" "Well, I've heard of this new club in the centre of town that has a live band and they play all sorts of stuff. The only criterion they are given when they are choosing something to play is that you must be able to dance to it. It sounds fun, doesn't it?" "Yes, that sounds crazy. Let's give it a try," said Isabella. "Have you got the address?" "Sure, I checked it out last night. It's near the Academy Galleria where you're going to work." "Oh, that's handy," exclaimed Isabella. "I can see myself spending plenty of time and money there then." Isabella guided the pair to the Galleria, aided by David's Audible app. It really was a remarkable piece of software, even more sophisticated than regular sat-nav tools. "My wife worked on this app. She said it was one of her proudest achievements. She did well." David was calm when he spoke about her. He did not get upset. He was clear. There was obvious emotion in his voice. He had clearly loved her, and probably still did. How do you get over something like that when someone leaves you so suddenly? "There's something else very important I haven't told you about me, us, my wife and I," said David. Isabella was not sure she was ready for this. The news about him having been married was one thing, then to have been widowed. Now what? "We have a son. He was 6 months old when Sheila died. My mother and father care for him. It was too difficult for me on my own, especially during COVID when I couldn't get much support. His name's Jonathan. He's coming up for 2 years old next month." Isabella was not shocked, but she was surprised. This was not something he should have been ashamed of. Why had he left it so long to tell her? "I didn't tell you before because I'm a little ashamed of myself. I think I should be able to look after him. Other blind parents do. I just couldn't cope. Maybe it was the fact that I was grieving as well. I should be bringing him up, I know. When you asked me if there was anything about being blind that really affected me negatively, this is it. I feel so bad about it. But I know this way he is cared for and everything works out well. I obviously go to see him as often as I can, and he knows I'm his daddy." Isabella didn't know which emotion to focus on first. There were so many running through her heart at this moment. Pity, sadness, understanding, care, concern, affection. David was obviously very unsettled about his inability to look after his own child. This was the only time she had ever seen him looking down and sorrowful. "David, it makes perfect sense. The arrangement you have come to with your parents. What else could you have done? You would always have needed support to look after him. Even Sheila would have needed that. We all do. You've done the right thing, and it is not as though you're out of his life completely." Isabella was doing her best to console him. "I know, but I just wish I could do more. Obviously, this is one of the reasons I work so many jobs, so that I can send as much money back to my parents to care for Jonathan." "I think they appreciate it," said David. "I'm sure they do, David. Kids are expensive these days, even at that age. Oh, we're here. I can't hear any music. Shall I go down first and have a look?" asked Isabella. "If you don't mind, could you check out the place and see how accessible it is and whether there's a good dance floor for us to dominate?" asked David. "Sure," said Isabella, as she turned to go down the stairs. As she entered the club, a warm hand was placed upon her shoulder, and a man's sensual and soft voice whispered in her ear. "Hello, my darling Isabella. Fancy meeting you here." That voice was unmistakable. It was Luigi, alone. Thank you. Chapter 40. Francesca was busy at work, making the most of Signor Facchetti's absence. The whole mood of the court seemed to have lifted with him not being there, and she felt she and everyone else had got much more done without his stifling interference. Midway through the morning, she received a welcome and unexpected visitor. It was Maria Elena. She was introduced into Francesca's presence as having attended the court to discuss business matters concerning her sponsor and the Medici family. But of course, she was there to provide news of Michelangelo and his proposed escape to Fiesole. As the courtier closed Francesca's office door, Maria Elena skipped towards Francesca, greeting her in the middle of the large office with an enormous, affectionate hug. "My darling Francesca, I've heard from the village that Antonio's grandfather is going to come into the city tomorrow morning, as suggested. It means it's our best chance to make good Signor Buonarroti's escape. Can things be made ready for this?" asked Maria Elena. "Of course we must, my dear Maria Elena," replied Francesca. "We were almost discovered yesterday evening by guards in the Medici chapel. They came down into the very rooms where Signor Buonarroti is hiding, and we were almost undone. I managed to fool them, and they even escorted me home. It was very close, and I was so nervous." "It's decided, then. We must depart tomorrow." "Will you go to see Signor Buonarroti this evening to tell him?" asked Maria Elena. "I shall. He doesn't have many possessions there. He has just a few items of clothing, but I'll tell him to wear as much as he can and to throw away the rest in the city streets. They will soon be collected by the city's beggars," answered Francesca. The women sat and talked and held hands as they did so. One of the courtiers came to attend to them and brought them some refreshments. They dined together and then kissed as they parted, the affection between them seemingly growing day by day. In the evening, Francesca walked the dogs by the river again to clear her mind and to plan in her head how she would tell Michelangelo of the necessary movements the next day. As she sat by the river, watching Rosa and Luna play in the shallow water by the riverbank, her mind drifted to Antonio and how he would be coping back in Bologna for his final examinations. She, of course, knew nothing of the problems he had had with Signor Facchetti on his way there, so she was oblivious of the pain and suffering he had endured at the pervert's hands. Francesca increasingly felt that she had been harsh on the young man, who had only shown her kindness and affection. Perhaps they would meet again if he did return to Florence, as he suggested he might. Moving quickly through the dark city streets, Francesca quietly sang the song which would alert Michelangelo to her presence. She hoped that this would be the final time she would have to call on him secretly in this way, and that he could find some peace and relaxation in the countryside. She advised Signor Buonarroti of the things he could carry with him the next day, probably in the afternoon after the market, as Antonio's grandfather returned to Fiesole. Michelangelo seemed to be in agreement with everything Francesca said. After the events of the previous evening, he felt it impossible to stay in his hideaway any longer. The master was grateful for the bread and water Francesca had brought him, and he promised to eat more when he felt safer and more at peace in the village. He had lost a lot of weight and was looking grey and gaunt, not least because he had not seen the sunlight of the beautiful city for nearly 3 months. Leaving him in his dark and dingy hole for what she hoped would be the last time, Francesca walked smartly through the city streets towards her home. Francesca had a sense of impending doom, as if something bad was about to happen. Her sensitivity had not failed her. Before she reached the narrow passageway towards her home, a tall figure, in what she took to be a dark red uniform, stepped out of the shadows directly into her path. The man wore a dark cloak over his hose and doublet, and she felt she might have recognised him, but he had a scarf pulled up over his face. He addressed her by name.
"Signora Fabrizia, good evening. It is very late to be wandering the city streets alone, don't you think?"
The harsh voice sounded familiar. She had certainly heard it before, but she couldn't quite place where. "I think you and I have some business to transact, don't you?" he continued. Now she was very confused. No businessman she knew would want to conduct business on the city streets at this hour, and certainly not in such a menacing and intimidating way. She was scared. She tried to edge towards the gate to her property, but the man stood directly in front of her, his huge frame
now apparent as he stood over her. "Perhaps we should discuss this inside. What do you think? That would be nice." The tone of his voice now darkening even further. "Why, who are you? What business do we have to conduct?" she begged. "Let's just say I have knowledge of the whereabouts of Signor Michelangelo Buonarroti, and I believe you have too. Would I be right in that?" "Who? Where? What do you mean?" cried Francesca, unconvincingly. Now, no more games of hide and seek. I know what you have been doing for the past few weeks. Now shall we go inside?" He seethed through his nasty, gritted teeth, his hand now menacingly on her lower back and sliding down towards her bottom, pushing her through the gate into her outer courtyard. As the pair entered the dark and closed space, Francesca hoped desperately that she had not tied the dogs up when she went to work that morning. They were now her only hope. Chapter 41. Isabella felt her heart skip a beat when she turned around and saw Luigi. It had been some months since she had seen him. She was disappointed in herself that she still felt that instant pang of attraction the second she saw him. She couldn't help herself. "Luigi, what are you doing here?" she murmured. "Playing in the band, of course, like I always do. There's more than one club in town, you know. Little Bird told me you were down in our old haunt the other night, with a blind guy." "Surely not," he laughed. "I beg your pardon, he's with me tonight. His name's David. He suggested this place, not me," explained Isabella unnecessarily. "You'd better come in then. You can come in for free, but he'll have to pay. Who is he? A work colleague or something? What are you doing now, charity cases?" Luigi sneered impolitely. "Actually, he's my English teacher and my masseur, if you must know." Isabella wasn't sure why she was explaining herself to this man who, despite his gorgeous looks and great body, was not a nice human being. She was now only slowly beginning to realise that. "David, welcome to the club. That will be €20. No discounts for the disabled," joked Luigi in a totally non-humorous way. As David passed him to go down the stairs into the club, Luigi deliberately allowed David to walk into his shoulder, to which Luigi responded by forcing his shoulder aggressively into David's chest, almost making him fall downstairs. "Watch where you're going, big fella," Luigi shouted. "Oh, sorry, you can't, can you?" "Bastard," cried Isabella as she witnessed the altercation. David had paused for a moment to decide what response to make, and he was only stopped from saying something by Isabella's insistence that he should ignore Luigi. "You know what these doormen can be like," she said. Isabella ordered drinks for the pair as she guided David to the safety of a table near the front of the small club. "It's not very big in here," she said. "Dancing will be a little more difficult than the other night." "That's okay," said David. "I don't mind. We can go somewhere else if you like." Neither spoke after that. Each was concerned with what had just happened without actually saying so. They drank their drinks in near silence until Isabella asked, "How long has the doctor said you have to have the cast on your wrist for, David?" "Oh, just a few weeks, 5, maybe 6. The scaphoid is a tiny bone, but difficult to heal because you're always moving your thumbs without realising it. I'm most worried about my massage work because I was really starting to enjoy it. It's an interesting way to meet people like you." "I'm sure it is. Do you ever get carried away when you're touching somebody's body so intimately?" asked Isabella. "I'm a professional," laughed David. "Of course I don't," he lied. This interaction seemed to lighten the mood a little, helped by the band coming on to play their first set. Luigi was the bass player, and he chose to stand right in front of David and Isabella's table, almost provocatively. Isabella tried her best to ignore him as the couple started dancing, but she found it difficult to take her eyes off his athletic body, his long, dark, curly hair, and his gyrating, slim hips. After a few songs and a quick refreshment break, Isabella spoke insistently to David. "Perhaps we should go somewhere else. I'm not really feeling this band, are you?" David obviously didn't know that his love rival was up on the stage in front of them, but he agreed with Isabella's suggestion, and the pair left the club immediately. "Do you fancy something to eat?" suggested David. "Although I know you don't like eating this late on." "No, that would be nice. You know what? I'm in the mood for pizza," she laughed. "Well, we're in Italy, right? That shouldn't be too hard to find. Let's do it," replied David. Isabella guided David to a nice takeaway cabin she knew, down one of the side streets near the glorious Il Duomo, and the pair sat on the edge of a fountain, enjoying themselves to each other's pizza slices. "This could get a bit messy," said David, as he tried to suck a piece of pepperoni into his mouth from the side of one slice. "Do you know that in England, people put pineapple on pizzas? I think you'd be shot if you asked for that here, wouldn't you?" "It wouldn't go down well, I'm sure," laughed Isabella. "People are very proud of their food in Italy, as you will appreciate." Isabella was feeling much more comfortable now she was away from the gaze and physical presence of Luigi. However good a lover he had been, he was certainly not a nice person. She regretted that she hadn't learnt that lesson earlier. The couple walked arm in arm, just wandering around the airless city, trying their best to remain cool, although it was very difficult. "Would you like a drink?" asked David as he heard the clashing and clinking of glasses nearby. "Yes, that would be nice. I'm really thirsty. I don't need any alcohol, just a long, cold drink," answered Isabella. The pair sat side by side on a long couch outside the restaurant and listened to some recorded music from inside. "I love music, don't you, David?" she asked. "Of course," he replied. "My mother always used to sing around the house. I grew up on Verdi and Puccini. I still love it today. Would you excuse me, please, just for one moment, Isabella?" David stood up and stepped away from her and took out his mobile phone. He was making a call. It wasn't very late, and she wasn't intending for the night to end so suddenly. As a welcome breeze brought the sound of David's voice back into her hearing, Isabella distinctly heard David say, "I love you very much. Night-night." As he sat down, Isabella felt the confusion she had experienced from David a couple of times now. She was a little concerned and decided to front him up and ask him directly what was going on. "Who was that call to, David?" she asked rather sharply. "To Jonathan," he said. "I wish him good night every night before he goes to sleep, even though I don't think he knows what it means, but I have to speak to him before he goes to bed." With tears in her eyes, Isabella turned away from David, and even though she knew he couldn't see her, she protected him from the pitiful look on her face. She squeezed his left hand tightly as the pair sat in continued silence, breathing in the night air and experiencing the mutual affection and comfort that was growing between them. Chapter 42. Francesca suddenly realized who this man was, although she didn't know his name. It was the taller of the two soldiers who had come down into the rooms underneath the Medici Chapel the night before. He must have realized what was going on, or found further evidence of Michelangelo's presence. As she moved quietly under the young olive tree in her courtyard, she knew she had to do something pretty dramatic to scare off this offensive intruder. Without any further thought, she let out an almighty, shrill, high-pitched scream that had her two dogs running immediately past her from their makeshift kennel to attack the man who had pushed her into the garden. Rosa had jumped up at his groin and was busily chewing at his hose, her teeth sunk deep into his manhood. Luna was at the same time gnawing at his right leg, despite his trying to kick her away with his left. Francesca joined in the attack by hitting the soldier across the head with a large piece of wood which had been propped up against the kitchen wall. "Get out! Get out of my garden!" she screamed. The commotion of her screams, the barking of the dogs, and the anguished shouts of pain and panic from the man attracted nearby neighbours who were now rushing to Francesca's aid. "This man followed me home," she explained, "and now he has just attacked me." There was no time for her to try to explain anything. She just wanted to make as much of the situation as she could to get the man away from her. He was busily trying to explain himself as the baker from the corner of her street landed punch after punch into his fat face. Two other young men, who she had never seen before, had grabbed hold of the soldier's arms to render him defenceless as he was dragged away into the alleyway at the side of her house. Francesca nervously scrambled to open the door to her property and shooed the dogs into the house once she had managed to disentangle them from the poor man's bedraggled body. Closing and locking the door behind her, she could still hear the punches raining down on the poor man as he was severely beaten, but now Francesca's mind was drawn to whether Michelangelo was in immediate danger and whether he could be left in the crypt overnight. Francesca decided that she had to go to get him now. The next day may be too late. Turning away from the ugly scene still taking place behind her house, she ran towards the Medici Chapel and didn't even bother with the secret code to gain entry. Michelangelo, there has been a change of plan. You must come with me now. You are not safe here. I will explain on the way. You will have to come to my house for the night. Please grab what you can and hurry. Michelangelo had been half asleep, and he stood, confused and dazed at the information he was expected to take in. What do you mean? I thought we were going tomorrow. Maria Elena said that you would call for me in the afternoon. That was then, Michelangelo. This is now. We must go. Now, hurried Francesca. Taking only a few parchment drawings and a bundle of untidy clothes, Signor Buonarroti dutifully followed Francesca into the night of the city. Please don't rush, my dear. My legs will not carry me. I've not moved for many weeks. My body is weak. He was certainly in a bad way, not able to fully stand up straight and clearly struggling to walk. Nobody would have recognized him from the well-built, tall man he had been. He was doubled over in an inelegant disguise. Weaving through the busy streets, Francesca tried to explain to him what had happened, but he didn't seem to appear to take it in. It was all too much for him. Am I putting you in danger? He asked as they paused for breath under the canopy of some large buildings in the centre of the city. I don't want you to take me with you if you're going to be put at risk. Please just leave me here. I will find lodgings for the night amongst the poor. Don't be silly. Please just come with me. It is only for one night. We are going to Fiesole tomorrow. There I am sure you will be safe. Please, just try to walk with me a little more. Lean against me if you need to. The pair struggled for what seemed like forever until they reached the dark alleyway leading down to Francesca's home. There was no sign of the soldier or of the baker who had rendered him unconscious. Out of the shadows, though, stepped another man, just as Francesca got to the wooden gate of her property. He made her and Michelangelo jump in unison. He'll not be troubling you again, Signora Fabrizia, not this night anyway. If he should ever come near you again, please just do as you did and scream. We will come immediately. It was one of the young men who had been grappling with the soldier, who she now understood to be the sons of the baker. Thank you, she said. Thank you. Michelangelo asked what had been going on, but she did not explain. She merely ushered the master into her home and made him comfortable on the long couch she sometimes used as a daybed. You'll be fine here for one night, she said. Please just get some rest. Tomorrow will be a busy day. As she retired to bed, she contemplated on the day's challenging events and how, downstairs, lay one of the greatest creative men in history, fearful and anguished, yet still worthy of her love, respect and attention. She knew she was in the presence of greatness. She could sense his aura, his spirit and his energy. She had always felt it. It was a comfort to her as she drifted off to sleep, guarded by her two dogs and satisfied that she had done everything she could to protect and honour the greatness of the man. Francesca had done a good deed for him and would continue to protect him. Somehow she felt it was her life's purpose to reveal his greatness to the world. It was her destiny. Now she was certain of it.